This is the Ultra Running History Podcast. I'm your host, Davey Crockett. Thanks for coming. This is episode 154. In this episode, I will celebrate Camille Herron's recent 6-day record of 560 miles by telling another 6-day race story back in 1879, a race with 40 entrants, mostly rookie amateur ultra runners. The race was the American Championship Belt, held in Madison Square Garden.
Welcome to Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena.
I made a post on Facebook about Camille's world record on my popular Ultra Running History Facebook page, and it went viral. It was seen by more than a million people, most of whom had never heard about the 6-day race. Congratulations poured into Camille for this amazing accomplishment. I also shared the progression of the world record she broke that was first set in the first women's 6-day race in 1876 when Mary Marshall reached 233 miles. Many people just could not believe that ultra running existed in the 1800s, especially involving women. One poster wrote, "Fake news." They were under the typical false historic view that ultra running was invented in the 1970s in California, and tried to correct me. That false history has been fed into so many people's minds for the past 45 years. Well, it is time that people understood that some of the best ultra runners the world has ever known were competing nearly 150 years ago in the 6-day race. This episode will also be a sneak peek of the new book I'm working on, The 6-Day Race Part 2, The Ultra Running Mania of 1879 and 1880. In this upcoming book, the pedestrian mania was raging across America, Great Britain, and being introduced to Canada and Australia. Make sure you catch up and get my new book available now on Amazon, The 6-Day Race Part 1, When Ultra Runners Were Called Pedestrians. To help you understand the historical significance of Camille Herron's 6-day world record, let's go back to 1879, the year when the most 6-day races in history were held and the world records started to be established. From 1875 to 1879, at least 130 6-day races were held, mostly in America and Great Britain. In 1879, the foot races became the number one spectator sport in America. During that single year, at least 88 6-day races were held worldwide, with about 900 starters and witnessed by nearly 1 million spectators. Women played a significant role in these early 6-day races, a century before they could take part in a marathon. From 1875 to 1879, at least 30 6-day women's races were held, involving 150 women starters who ran as far as 393 miles in 6 days. These daring women athletes caused a significant rift across the Victorian-era society. An editorial in the New York Times stated,
"Today it is the walking match. Soon the women's vote will come."
It isn't surprising that once the women competed, that New York City considered passing an ordinance banning, quote, "all public exhibitions of female pedestrianism." Many people thought these races, even limited to men, were a plague on society, especially because of all the wagering that took place and suspected corruption involved. In Louisiana, it was written,
"Can't someone up there give these lunatics some kind of credible employment in which they can exercise their pedal extremities to their heart's content?"
From London, England,
"One of these days, when one of these poor fellows, dazzled with the distinct prospect of gold, drops dead on the track, science will be satisfied, sports appeased, and public indignation aroused. Pedestrians will go on doing the best time on record until they drop down dead.
After a huge race in New York City, the third Astley Belt race, that affected attendance at churches that week, a minister wrote,
"New York has been shamefully disgraced. This commercial emporium is a dishonor in the sight of God and in the eyes of the civilized world."
Great Britain was slow to accept women's six-day races. They initially felt they were brutal affairs. Only two women's six-day matches have been found, which were held in Britain during the 1800s. It would take more than a century for Eleanor Adams of England to dominate the six-day race and become the first woman in history to surpass 500 miles in 6 days. Camille Herron was the first woman to surpass 500 miles in 5 days. These early pedestrians at first had a goal to surpass 500 miles in 6 days. They then kept pushing the six-day record further until George Littlewood of England reached 623 miles in 1888. That record stood for nearly a century and was considered a running record that would never be broken. But it eventually was broken by one man. Today, the six-day world record is held by Yannis Kouras of Greece, who covered an astonishing distance of 635 miles on a track in New York City in 1984. Later in 2005, he increased that record to 643 miles in 6 days, which has stood now for nearly 20 years. In 2021, the six-day race received some attention in the ultrarunning circles because the International Association of Ultrarunners, IAU, announced that they would no longer recognize the six-day event or keep records for it. This shocked many ultra-running historians and particularly runners who took part in multi-day fixed-time races. After a brief uproar, the new IAU leadership backpedaled, somewhat embarrassingly admitted their ignorance about six-day ultra-running history, and agreed to continue to recognize the event that has roots in the sport going back nearly 150 years. Ultrarunning's most popular race from 1875 to 1908 was the six-day race. There were at least 400 of these six-day races held, with at least 4,000 starters. In 1879, the British established a six-day world championship series of races called the Astley Belt. After the third Astley Belt race in early 1879, won by Charles Rowell of Great Britain, Daniel O'Leary, the former six-day champion of the world, spent a lot of time pondering how the British seemed to be exceeding the Americans in the six-day sport. He became convinced that no strict walker could ever again win a highly competitive six-day race against runners. The best strict heel-toe walkers could exceed 500 miles in 6 days, but not much further. He believed the runners being developed in Britain could go much further than 500 miles. It was time for the Americans to learn how to run more during these go-as-you-please six-day races. During April 1879, at least 12 six-day races were held during that month, including 5 during the same week. A significant race was held that month called the American Championship Belt at Gilmer's Garden, New York, soon to be renamed Madison Square Garden. This race was billed as a contest to produce the best man to be sponsored to compete in the fourth Astley Belt race, to be scheduled in June of 1879 in England. For this qualifying race, $1,000 and a championship belt would be awarded to the winner. The race was open only to residents of the United States of America and would be under the direction of the New York Athletic Club. Belts, not belt buckles, had become the traditional award for the winner of six-day races. Belts had roots for decades in the boxing sport. The belt for this race was described as
38 inches long, 5 inches wide, made of 7 heavy plates of gold and silver, and bearing the inscription, Championship Pedestrian Belt of the United States.
Figures of runners were inscribed on 2 plates of the belt, some with wings or wheels for feet. The central plate featured 2 large figures of the Statue of Liberty and a Native American. The organizers planned for 40 starters, which would by far be the largest 6-day race ever held up to that point. This race was significant because it was the first major race where the field was composed mostly of amateurs who were rookie 6-day runners. The entry fee for this race was not as expensive compared to the previous 6-day races, and thus a new crop of 36 6-day greenhorns entered the race. Only 4 others had 6-day race experience. With all this inexperience, they were in risk of putting on a disaster. With the immense field, many tents were needed for the runners and crews.
2 dozen of the tents are included in 4 rows of 6 tents each, 2 rows on each side of the garden, and the remaining 17 in a semicircle. This display of canvas gives the garden something of the appearance of a military encampment. Each tent contains a little cot bed, a table, a gas stove, and 1 or 2 chairs.
It was believed that the tent canvas would keep out the dust and tobacco smoke that would hover in the air of the building. The rails surrounding the track on both sides were now made of heavy timbers, replacing the flimsy ropes from the last races. The Brooklyn Daily Eagle, recalling how some spectators got clubbed by the police at the garden during the previous month's third Astley Belt race, wrote,
"Tramps have begun at Gilmer's Garden, but the people are beginning to understand that there is no law which compels them to go there and get clubbed for 50 cents.
Here's a spotlight of 2 important runners in the race. Peter Penchote was a postman from Buffalo, New York. He was born to French parents and served in the Civil War as a member of the Minnesota Infantry. He was called Little Moccasin because he wore moccasins when on the track. Standing at a height of 5'4" and weighing approximately 130 pounds, he was described as
very good looking with a dark complexion, tough and wiry, with a quick nervous step and extraordinary powers of endurance, and had a graceful running motion.
He began long distance running in 1878 and competed in 3-mile races. In May 1878, he got the attention of Buffalo when he won a 50-mile walk in 11 hours and 11 minutes, and won again in June with 10 hours and 17 minutes. Next, he walked 100 miles in 22 hours, 27 minutes. He won other races and then entered the 6-day race as Buffalo's favorite undefeated local pedestrian. Stephen Brody, age 17, was called the New York Newsboy Pedestrian. He grew up in the tough Bowery section of New York City. At age 9, he moved out of his poverty-stricken home and moved into a boys' home and later went to live in a newsboy lodging house. The career of the newsboy was explained.
You had to sell newspapers every day, or else you risked becoming homeless. You fought for street corners and fought to protect your property. Men robbed the boys, and other boys robbed the younger boys.
In his late teens, Brody led his own gang of newsboys. In February 1879, at the age of 17, Brody made his first attempt to break into the sport of pedestrianism when he walked 90 miles in under 24 hours in the gym of the newsboys' lodging home. He quickly achieved youthful stardom in New York City and followed that up by walking 50 miles in 8 hours and 39 minutes in front of 3,000 people at Hoboken, New Jersey. With that success, he was accepted to compete in the American Championship Belt. The start of the race was delayed for an hour for some reason, and that gave the 2,000 spectators a chance to walk around the place.
The garden was damp, chilly, and uncomfortable, but the crowd amused themselves by walking over the floor, peering into the tents, and starting the week's supply of cigar smoke.
A large group of newsboys took seats across from the scores table, ready to cheer their fellow boy Brody. As the race director tried to make a speech, the boys shouted,
"Brody! Brody! Brody's the man!"
The race began at 1 a.m. on April 14, 1879.
The men came to the starting point in 40 different costumes, long and short, fat and lean, and of a dozen nationalities. They set off from 7 starting points and were nicknamed the 40 Thieves. The crowd laughed heartily at the strange antics put on by some of the men on the track, while Brody, the newsboy, went round in a circle of applause. Only about 6 out of the 40 walkers were strong and graceful enough to their movements to elicit any degree of admiration from the spectators. They trailed around in a manner that excited merriment, pity, and ridicule alternately as the motley line passed in review.
The first to quit the race at mile 45 was Thomas Callahan, who worked as a dirt collector with a cart in the streets of New York.
Those who saw his pipe-stem legs wondered how they could have carried him over so much ground. He is satisfied that there is more dust to be picked up in the streets than on the sawdust track.
Ludwig Kyleberg of New York City was soon out too.
He had weakened himself with strong whiskey and had hopped around like a sick Paiute in a war dance.
Brody ran close to the frontrunners, but started to look lame after the first day.
Brody the newsboy was the picture of distress, and notwithstanding the opinion of his attendants that he was tough and all right, it was evident that only their ignorance and his own pluck kept him moving around the track.
He found his groove and continued strong. The common joke people yelled at the newsboy was, "Are they getting out news extras?" He was often seen chewing away at a large sandwich as he plodded along. His gait was described as, quote, "a very slouchy manner, with his head hanging forward and his arms swinging violently." William Dutcher of Poughkeepsie, New York, was one of the very few runners with previous six-day experience, although he had a reputation as a cheater and a fraud. He had a rough time during the first evening.
In consequence of having his belt strapped too tightly and attempting a fast spurt, he dropped on the track in a faint and was carried to his tent insensible. But in a few minutes, he reappeared and walked the rest of the evening as though nothing had happened.
He would quit on day 5 after 286 miles, with his feet covered with terrible blisters. Peter Penchote was the first to reach 100 miles in about 19 hours, 23 minutes, and led after day 1 with 104 miles. By day 2, more than half of the rookie field was worn out. By the morning of day 3, half of the field had dropped out. Much of the crowd was disappointed that the hothead John Hughes dropped out,
for his egotism was something amusing,
and many of the spectators amused themselves getting him riled up. His wife had been seen chewing him out, and it was believed that she made him quit. Brody was doing well.
The youngster was astonishing everyone.
He vowed to continue for the entire 6 days. He was a hero to all the New York City newsboys.
Shivering newsboys, wet to the skin, stood in the half-shelter of the building outside, inquiring eagerly of persons whom they supposed had just come from the inside. "How is Steve Brody getting along?"
It became boring for the spectators when most of the runners were resting in their tents. The crowd would cheer loudly and shame the walkers to come out of their tents. They would then go around the track, quote, "like a flock of startled sheep." It was said that many of the 13 remaining walkers, quote, "looked fitter to be in bed than walking."
The atmosphere was so cold and damp that several of the walkers were forced to wear coats. Everything had a dingy and dirty appearance. Bookmakers sat at their little tables, vainly endeavoring to get bets. The crowd in the barroom drank in solemn silence, and most of the imbibers had a look about them of having been up all night.
In the evening, about 2,000 people came to watch. After 4 days, Panchote was at 337 miles, 13 miles ahead of Samuel Merritt. Samuel Merritt, from Bridgeport, Connecticut, was only 21 years old and looked younger. He was tall, 6 foot, and weighed 150 pounds. In February 1879, Merritt won a 6-day race, the Connecticut State Championship, against 5 other runners, reaching 400 miles.
He was a tall, ungraceful-looking young man, who was described as having a shambling gait, bringing his arms in front of him with each step. However, with that method of progression, he could run like a deer, which it suited him.
As the race neared its conclusion, the young man still tried to get into the building without paying for a ticket.
It was no little amusement to the spectators to watch the various appearance of heads at the broken windows, the stealthy entrances, and the sudden ignominious ejections of the culprits from the gallery they had attained from such infinite pains by the police officers who lay in wait for the rascals as a cat does for a mouse.
When Panchote completed his 400th mile, the band played Yankee Doodle, and 10 letter carriers from the New York City Post Office came out on the track to present a letter of congratulations to their fellow postman, Panchote.
He smiled and bowed as he took it, but did not pause an instant in his walk.
He hung the letter on the front of his tent. At the end of day 5, Panchote was at 407 miles, only 6 miles ahead of Merritt in a close race. On the final day, only 8 of the original 40 runners were still competing, giving evidence that the 6-day race is not an event for the untrained amateur. It was said that the young newsboy Brody was in the best condition of the 8 runners who remained on the track.
Brody, time and time again, ran around amid the cheers of the crowd.
He smartly would run around the track carrying a bundle of newspapers, which he autographed and sold to the spectators at exorbitant prices. His friends solicited newspaper subscriptions for him in the crowds.
An extra, extra. Read all about it.
The main competition was between Panchote and Merritt. Panchote started the final day with a narrow 7-mile lead, and Merritt cut into that lead. Observers were surprised at how well Panchote was doing because he did not look like he was built for a long-distance runner.
The man plodded along wearily through the day, and at 7 o'clock p.m., the garden began to fill up. 2 hours later, it was crammed with 6,000 people, with a large sprinkling of ladies being among the spectators.
As victory was assured, Panchote, wearing a U.S. Post Office cap, swung 2 American flags over his shoulders and quickened his steps as the vast audience cheered him. He finished with 480 miles with 3 hours to spare. Merritt finished second with 475 miles. Brody finished seventh with 375 miles. William Curtis of the Spirit of Times newspaper presented Panchote his award and said,
"You came among as a stranger, Mr. Panchote. We knew nothing of you, but you have earned the belt, which I am pleased to have the opportunity of handing over to you."
He also won $1,000. As Panchote left the building, he was given thunderous applause. Panchote beat the mark that John Ennis of Chicago ran during the 3rd Astley Belt race a month earlier. Ennis wrote,
"Panchote has done a wonderful performance, which places him in the front ranks of pedestrianism. Buffalo can justly feel proud of her champion."
American sportsmen hoped that Panchote would go to England to compete in the 4th Astley Belt race. Not everyone in New York celebrated.
"If the walking mania continues to catch victims, it will soon be as great a nuisance as baseball. One of the statesmen is making an effort to squelch it by introducing a bill making walking for money a misdemeanor, but there is no probability of its passage. The mania will doubtless run itself out if left alone.
Stay tuned for more 6-day race history and get my new book on Amazon, The 6-Day Race Part 1, When Ultra Runners Were Called Pedestrians. With that, this is Davy Crockett, and this is the Ultra Running History Podcast. I hope you run fast and far, enjoy life, get outdoors, and most of all, stay safe and don't take unnecessary chances.